the best of all teachings. Whereas what he had learned about diplomacy from his material teachers, Shand and Amarka, was useless. Bhakti Parishano Bhavo Varaktir Anyatra Cha, Bhagavatam 11.2.42. This is the symptom of pure devotional service. A pure devotee is interested only in devotional service, not in material affairs. To execute devotional service, one should always engage in hearing and chanting about Krishna or Lord Vishnu. The process of temple worship is called Archana. How to perform Archana will be explained herein. One should have complete faith in the words of Krishna, who says that he is the great well-wishing friend of everyone. Srid Sarva Bhutanam. A devotee considers Krishna the only friend. This is called Sakhyam. Pumsar Pita Vishnu. The word Pumsa means by all living entities. There is no distinctions between permitting only a man or only a brahmana to offer devotional service to the Lord. Everyone can do so. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9.32, Striyo Vaishyastata Shudroste Api Yanti Param Gatim. Although women, Vaishyas and Shudras are considered less intelligent, they also can become devotees and return back home, back to Godhead. After performing sacrifices, sometimes a person engaged in fruitive activities customarily offers results to Vishnu. But here it is said, Bhagavati Adha. One must directly offer everything to Vishnu. This is called sannyas, not merely nyas. A tridandi sannyasi carries three dandas, signifying kaya, mano, vakya, body, mind and words. All of these should be offered to Vishnu, and then one can begin devotional service. Fruitive workers first perform some pious activities and then formally or officially offer the results to Vishnu. The real devotee, however, first offers his surrender to the Lord with his body, mind and words, and then uses his body, mind and words for the service of Krishna, as Krishna desires. Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives the following explanation in his Tathya. The word Shravana refers to giving oral reception to the holy name, and descriptions of the Lord's form, qualities, entourage and pastimes are explained in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita and similar authorized scriptures. After orally receiving such messages, one should memorize these vibrations and repeat them. Kirtanam. Smaranam means trying to understand more and more about the Supreme Lord. And Parasevanam means engaging oneself in serving the lotus feet of the Lord according to the time and circumstances. Archanam means worshipping Lord Vishnu as one does in the temple. And Vandana means offering respectful obeisances. Manmana bhavo madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. Vandana means namaskuru. Offering obeisances or offering prayers. Thinking oneself to be Nitya Krishna Das, everlastingly a servant of Krishna, is called Dasyam. And Sakhyam means being a well-wisher of Krishna. Krishna wants everyone to surrender unto him because everyone is constitutionally his servant. Therefore, as a sincere friend of Krishna, one should preach this philosophy, requesting everyone to surrender to Krishna. Atma Nivedana means offering Krishna everything, including one's body, mind, intelligence, and whatever one may possess. It's a long purport song. Please stay focused. One's sincere endeavor to perform these nine processes of devotional service is technically called bhakti. It's a nice definition of bhakti. Bhakti Prabhupada says is one's sincere endeavor to perform these nine process of devotional service is technically called bhakti. The word adha means directly. One should not be like the karmis who perform pious activities and then formally offer results to Krishna. That is karma kanda. One should not aspire for the results of his pious activities, but should dedicate oneself fully and then act piously. In other words, one should act for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu, not for the satisfaction of his own senses. That is the meaning of the word adha, directly. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karmadhyana vritam anukulyena krishnanu shrinam bhaktir uttama. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord, Krishna, favorably and without desire for material profit or gain through futile activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. One should simply satisfy Krishna without being influenced by fruitive knowledge or fruitive activity. The Gopal Tapani Upanishad says that the word bhakti means engagement in devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not of anyone else. This Upanishad describes that bhakti is the offering of devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. To perform devotional service, one should be relieved of the bodily conception of life and aspirations to be happy through elevation to the higher planetary systems. In other words, work performed simply for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord without any desire for material benefits is called bhakti. Bhakti is also called nishkarma, or freedom from the results of fruitive activity. Bhakti and nishkarma are on the same platform. Although devotional service and fruitive activities appear almost the same, the nine different processes enunciated by Prahlad Maharaj, who learned them from Narad Muni, may not all be required for the execution of devotional service. The devotee performs only one of these nine without deviation, he can attain the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes it is found that when one performs one of the processes, other processes are mixed with it. That is not improper for a devotee. When a devotee executes any one of the nine processes, Navalakshana, this is sufficient. The other processes are included. Now, let us discuss these nine different processes. So this is not discussion so far. Discussion is to begin. Okay.
Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupaha Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam.
We are very fortunate that in the forthcoming days we will be blessed with the opportunity to hear from the great Mahajan devotee Prahlad about this very, very essential subject of Shuddha Bhakti, which is the very purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam. In difference to other scriptures, which are many in number, almost unlimited, this stands out, being super saturated with only those philosophies, concepts, devotees which deal with Shuddha Bhakti. Nothing mixed, nothing ordinary, everything transcendental. When I read this verse years ago, and then when I had this very popular song by Govinda Kaviraj, it also talks about Shravana Kirtana Smarana Vandana Pada Sandasyare Pujana Sakhijana Atmanivedana Govinda Dasa Abhinashyare. So that same Navalakshana Bhakti also appears in that beautiful song, Govind Kaviraj. So that at points it struck me very much, I remember, and even today it sort of enthuses me to know that what we are hearing, or rather I would say what Prahlad has spoken in Satyuga is millions of years ago from now, is it not? Very, very, very long, long time. Bygone ages practically. And what we are hearing from Govinda Kaviraj, my sister Lord Chaitanya, even just 500 years ago, is still the same. So I could appreciate to some extent the mercy and the power of the parampara system. How is it? It is very, very bewildering actually that knowledge, or rather anything, what we talk of knowledge, anything can survive for millions of years. We all know to some extent the powerful influence of time. And how it has the power to destroy everything. Kalosmi, Krishna says, I am the destroyer of all worlds. And practically nothing has survived the test of time. The fame and glory of the most powerful kings on the planet is ruined to nothingness by the waves of time. Huge empires which govern the entire planet, large tracts of land, are lost into antiquity. So how is it that something which is spoken in Satyuga still is available to all of us? Everything changes so fast. Even if you to try and understand this concept of the power of parampara and the mercy we get through it, even if we consider a short history of just 500 years, forget millions of years, that will be too big a number for us to deal with. But we can probably deal with 500 years more easily. From the time of Lord Chaitanya's appearance in this world, 1486, till now, first of all, within just a few years of his coming to this world, practically only 150 years, knowledge just disappeared. Now imagine, a Yuga Avatar comes, the Lord Himself comes, and He brings all the power of Himself along with Him, and He comes, and He establishes something powerful, bhakti, and the power of time, 150 years, is not available to any human being on the planet practically. After He having converted, not one or two people to Krishna consciousness, but practically millions. South Indian tour. How many people he converted to Krishna? There is no calculation. He met so many people. He met practically the entire Indian subcontinent into devotees. And within five generations, all is lost. And as that is lost, it's not just lost. It's one thing to be lost. But then, again, your body loses immunity from any virus or HIV, whatever else. And not just that you lose immunity, but then all other accessory diseases also start along the loss of immunity. Some other things also start cropping up. You get fungal infections, and you get pneumonias, and you get this and that. So apasampradaya also started. Not one or two apasampradaya, but owl, bowl, know that? Nagar, Gauranga Nagari and Chudadhari and so many of them. 13, Prabhupada says, Bhaktivinoda Thakur time, 13 Apasampradaya. All claiming to be connected to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Everyone saying, we are Dhanaras with us. But completely, you know, teaching something very deviant. And for innocent people like you and me, who don't know anything of anything practically, we're completely born in ignorance, we stay in ignorance practically all our life. Somebody says, this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is what you know. Okay. Okay, bhai. Allow. You can accept it. How is a common man on the road supposed to know what is right or wrong, good or bad, bona fide, not bona fide, parampara, parampara? He doesn't know anything. But there you find somehow, something starts again. Some devotees come and they start again. And something is established. And then again, in the year 1670, Aurangzeb comes and destroys everything. And you find that in, his policy was very clear. Destroy the practitioners of religion, destroy their practices, destroy the promoters of those practices, and destroy places where it is practiced. Everything. The temples, the priests, the general devotees, everything. And the scriptures which promote it. Destroy everything. So that nobody in this world ever practices, let's say Hinduism. For him it was Hinduism. Nobody follows this dharma anymore. Destroy it. And in Krishna's land of birth, a Supreme Lord is born there. There is not a single Vaishnava practically remaining in Vrindavan, except a few handful. It's a terrible situation. And Vishnu Thakur had to depute in his old age Valdivida Bhushan. And of course, he also went, and they revived again. You know the history, in Galta, Jaipur, another attack on the parampara comes. The worship of Radharani is not bona fide. Your parampara itself is not bona fide. You don't have a authenticity for sampradaya. So power of time, which uses different people, the Ramanandis. Ramananda was a great saint of the 14th century, and his followers about Ramanandi, a subset of the Sri Sampradaya. They say that you guys have no standing whatsoever, because you don't have authentic commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam, on Vedanta Sutra. So imagine Radharani, who is, he's saying, the Gaurna Hoito, you would not know the glories of Radhar Mahima. You would not know the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's descent is to establish the glory of the worship of Srimati Radharani. And here are people who are from another so-called bona fide sampradaya itself, saying that you people are not bona fide. And that the power of the king, the political power, everything they had. So whole kingdom of Jaipur was contaminated by that particular philosophy that these Gaudiyas are all not bona fide. And then again, something had to start off. All talk of the philosophy, even the place of Mahaprabhu's descent was lost. Forget the philosophy, but at least where was he born, bhai? This place of which is the sacred place where the Lord descended. You can see how deviations creep in just few years. And this great Acharya Thakur Bhaktivinoda had to find out where the Lord descended. He was trying very hard. But there are philosophies, there were theories. Then Navadip is this particular city which is there on the western side of the Ganga. This is Navadip. Everyone believes that. You don't believe. Yeah, the whole city is believing. This is Navadip. Where are you staying? Address, Navadip. Postal address is Navadip. We are staying in Navadip. No, Navadip is on the eastern side. How is this on the western side? No. That Navadip you are talking about, that is already gone under the Ganga. It is already washed over the waves. So, for one man who questioned this completely accepted truth that Navadip is lost to Ganga, or this particular city which we are staying is called Navadip. Now who is going to challenge that? Okay, Navadip or Navadip, who cares, This is Navadip. But one man questioned that and went deep in the matter and he said, no, This city is normal. This is Navadvip. It took years of research. So even his place was lost, it had to be re-established again. So we can see the holiest of holy things get lost. The prime sporting pastimes of the Lord, Shamkund, Adakund, were lost. Is it not? So we can see, not as 500 years, even 5000 years, is sufficient to destroy practically everything. Now Krishna spoke the Gita just 5000 years ago. And till Srila Prabhupada's descent, the Gita was completely changed. Within 5000 years of Swayam Bhagwan coming, not even Avatar coming, this is Avatari Krishna coming, and that has some special value because Avatari Krishna is far more special than, in one sense, a regular scheduled avatar. And even when he comes with all his glory, whatever he speaks is so powerful to establish. But then when Prabhupada was asked by this lady, Swamiji, can you tell me some edition of Gita I can read? Prabhupada had to confess and say, I'm sorry. There are so many authors who have written the Gita, but I don't think any one of them is bona fide. During George Harrison's time, when they were talking on this subject with Prabhupada personally at Manor, there was something like 667 editions of the Gita available in the world. It's about 71-72. 667 editions at that time. I don't know how the figure came, but it is there. I've heard that. And now, of course, since 71, we have about 40 years down the line, far more scholars have emerged, and far more people have convinced that they know the truth. Sikha must have reached about 1008 by now. So everyone is claiming to speak on the Bhagavad Gita. But it is so much ingrained into our consciousness that there is one at least which is as it is. And that all of us are surviving on that state, that what we are getting from Prabhupada is that as it is thing. And we take pride when we sell the Gita to show people immediately after the index, after the, introduction. Ye hamara Gita hai na? This is the real one. We immediately go back to the page, right? First we attack them with the pictures and this and that, but then we want to tell them that please don't think that whatever you have in your house or this or that one is, this is the real one. Why? See the parampara. And Prabhupada, knowing this is such an important part of his presentation, before he can start commenting on the Gita, first give that parampara. In order to establish clearly that this, in comparison to anybody else, this is coming from Krishna directly. So he quotes 4.2, Evam Parampara Praptam. So this is the miracle of the Parampara. We need to appreciate this very, very deeply in our heart. Because this is the foundation of our spiritual life. The foundation of our faith is based on this. The Parampara has got three important functions to perform. One important consideration is, how is knowledge preserved? Knowledge preservation, knowledge dissemination, and knowledge expansion. How did that take place? Being this such a valuable jewel of a knowledge which Prahlad Maharaj gave us so many years ago, and knowing that how things are getting destroyed so soon. If you look at Krishna, he says, Yogo Nasta Parantapa. Now, if the word technically Nasta would mean that this knowledge is destructible. When you think about it deeply, he said, can knowledge of this type ever get destroyed? Material knowledge can get destroyed because it is material. On the lighter side, husbands often will talk to their wives in a joking way. Yeah, you don't make the things that my mother made. She used to be a great cook. She would cook this and that and so many other things. But you have not learned in parampara from her. That's the problem. Or daughters, they may have great cooks as their mothers. Generally in the previous generation, cooking was such a skill skill of excellence. That is, every woman who is in her 60s now is an excellent cook, because they know the family traditions, they know family dishes. They just know to make exactly what was being made for thousands of years, special dishes. Very special dishes. And then fortunately, this time of where we are right now, find those, the daughters don't learn it. And then when they go to their in-laws' house, they don't learn it over there also. So practically all that remains is the upper sampradaya of pizzas. Upper sampradaya pizzas and the noodles all start creeping in. The upper sampradaya actually. Because there is no bona fide tract of cooking skills anymore remaining. But something has to come and fill the, there's nature abhors a vacuum. So there's no vacuum in the house. Bread comes in and biscuits come in and, all these, is it not true? Purushottam Prabhu is. We Gujaratis know, how dear food is to us, and how we hanker for our mother's prasad. But yes, the fact remains that, the skills disappear. And now that your grandmother has gone, the skill is gone along with her. It can never be retrieved. So that knowledge is nashta. Those dishes are now no more available to the world. Those special dishes which our grannies used to prepare, they are gone forever. But can in a similar fashion spiritual knowledge also become nashta? The definition of spiritual should be anashta. The soul is not destroyed. The Muslims may think that they can destroy, hit the deity of the Lord and he is destroyed. But is he destroyed? He is not destructible. So this knowledge also is not destructible. This knowledge cannot be destroyed, but it disappears. And being destructible in that sense becomes lupta. The Lord has taken special onus on his own shoulders to preserve this. It is only by the special jurisdiction of the Lord's entry into the zone. He gives the whole material creation to, material energy, Durga Devi and Shivji and all of the people. They just manage the whole show, demigods. They manage all the rain and the snow and the weather and everything they manage. But when it comes to preserving knowledge, spiritual knowledge, it does not delegate to the demigods. It does not delegate to anybody else. He said, dharma samsar panartha is my job. Because you people cannot do it. 33 million demigods put together cannot have the power to maintain something so pure. It is only the sacred hands of the Lord which can hold this knowledge through millions and millions of years down the line. That is this Lord's special portfolio, you can say. He takes on himself as one of the important three reasons for his descent in the world. And someone not to be there, if he's not coming, then he will send some ray of Vishnu. His eternal associate. And while that is being done, the parampara does these three things. Knowledge preservation. We may think, talking about the parampara, about our previous acharyas, we have, look at the, 33 people, personalities, Jayatirtha and Vyasatirtha and, these people. You may think, what are these people? What are they? Just names? No. They're not just ordinary names. Why would a great acharya like Bhaktisiddhanta Sri Thakur write a whole song to glorify these acharyas? So it is important to glorify them through song, through poetry. And they may not have done the function of knowledge expansion or dissemination, but they definitely did the function of knowledge preservation. They preserved that knowledge, the sacred knowledge, dear to their bosoms, and kept it along, going, live, fresh, new, untouched by the power of time, power of wrong theories, the sampradayas. They preserved it, handed it to the next person. Take this, give it along, give it to the next people. And in this way, these often felt oblivious type of acharyas who are there in our line, after Vyasa, after Madhvacharya, till Lord Chaitanya, some of them are quite, appearing to be, but no. They are to be secretly worshipped in our heart, at least, proper understanding, that they have preserved that knowledge. The Lord empowered somebody to do something in more than just preservation. So they know what they may do. They may bring about knowledge expansion. So before Jivita Goswami was came in this world, the world was not having the 4 lakh verses which he wrote. But he took the scriptures, Sadharma Samsarpanatha, Nathaya. They took all the verses, this thing, and expanded and wrote his own 400,000 verses. All describing what? No karma kanda, no jnana kanda. Only talking of Anyabhilashita Shunyam. 400,000 verses. This is called as knowledge expansion. Gopal Bhatta Goswami, expansion. Rupa Goswami, expansion. So these Goswamis not only preserved, but they were specially empowered by Lord Chaitanya to also expand. 2 months. Mahaprabhu spent 2 months in instructing Sanatana Goswami. Not an ordinary piece of time. Just imagine, Mahaprabhu, he stayed for such a long time in this world. There is no historical reference to Mahaprabhu spending so much time with anybody. The Venkata Bhatta family was there. Venkata Bhatta was there, Gopal Bhatta Goswami is there, and the family was there. He was going to Rameshwaram temple, and he was going here and there and like that. He was doing so many things. But there's only one person he's talking to every day, morning to evening. For 2 months, the Sammada Acharya was given knowledge. And he wrote so much more. Knowledge, expansion took place. So the six Goswamis are responsible for the two functions now. Knowledge preservation and knowledge expansion. And the people who came after them, Srinivas Acharya, Matandas Thakur, Samanand Pandit, they did the third thing, which is dissemination. Because it cannot be a watertight compartment. This knowledge has to go to everybody, as Prabhupada says here. And it's for everybody. You know, the verse it says. For everybody. Not for India. Not for Hindus. Not for Brahmanas. Pandit Sannyasis. No. It's for everybody in the whole planet, for the whole universe. It's not a dissemination. So how much, and if you look at Prabhupada, one man doing all three things. One man, is not a team of people, just one man show. He had the power to re-establish a foundation of a movement which is going to last for thousands of years. So what is the power of this great personality? So it is not just his egocentric nature to say that when you always write the word Bhaktivedanta Swami, sometimes our devotees forgot to write the next line, Founder Acharya of International Revolution of Consciousness. And that was not written, probably very upset, very angry, annoyed with them. He wasn't he was very humble. Why did he want that, glorification? But because that is his position, which Krishna actually gave him. In Kali Yuga, which is all the more of time when things are destroyed so soon, the power of time is there since Satyuga. But Kali Yuga, if you look at it, things are destroyed so fast. There are some, books which are then written by some devotees who said, for example, the Taj Mahal. The whole world thinks Taj Mahal is built by Shah Jahan for his dead wife. But his book, the evidence is no. It's actually a very powerful Vedic monument. It was built at that time. And there are relics of inscriptions of various stones in Taj Mahal which have containing Vedic slokas and sutras and things like that. There are deities of Vishnu there, molested by our Muslim friends. And some stones with inscriptions, they turn it around, right? Muslim verses there and then fit it again so that verse is gone behind, stuck again. The Qutub Minar, same thing. The Qutubuddin built this. It is already there. Deities of Brahma and Vishnu have been found there. Mathematicians would live with that area, would use it as observatory tower for looking at astronomical things in the sky. It's an observatory tower for deciphering Vedic mathematics, astrological calculations. So there are many such things in Kali Yuga where things get distorted. Distortion is something which is very prominent in Kali Yuga, isn't it? Everything is distorted. Knowledge gets distorted. People get distorted. You know, everything is, people's hearts are distorted. Everything is distorted. At that time, and distortion, deviation is, you know, the mainstream activity of the world. To establish something which is so powerful that it cannot be even bent by anybody. Prabhupada preserved his knowledge powerfully. By his books, he preserved it. Nothing will change this now. There is a library in Kashmir, which was the biggest library of the entire planet. All the scriptures written for thousands upon thousands of years were preserved in Kashmir. Not just spiritual, of course, metaphysical, astrological, astronomical, Vedic, allied sciences, all of that put together. And there's a lot of warfare going on between our neighbors and our country. They knew this is a very important piece of information here. So that they don't even know how many books are there in that. There were literally millions of books. When they set fire to this whole library, it took 1 month to even burn it off. 1 month the books kept on burning. So many books were there. All this knowledge was lost. Because it was centralized. Prabhupada's genius. He had a book in everybody's home now. If it's a centralized place, it can be destroyed. But now there's a library in everyone's house. Everybody in our congregation has a Gita, a Bhagavatam set, more or less a CC set. A set of Prabhupada's books is there in entire congregations. How many devotees are there in the whole world? Several thousands. And all of them are still Prabhupada's books. It cannot be destroyed now. Prabhupada came to have such a wide, broad base. When you are going to build a big building, you have to have a very broad base and a very deep base. Two things. You can build a tall structure on narrow base also, but it is stronger if it is on a broad base. So now Prabhupada's book preservation technology is so broad that practically the books are there everywhere. And therefore Prabhupada said, now this moment is here to stay. Any lawsuits, any defilation of this movement takes place, New York 96-76, huge case on our movement, big powerful case, trying to destroy the bona fides of our movement. Every time it happens, forces will try to destroy. It is the system of this world, that good things have to be destroyed, and attempt will be made to destroy it. Good people, good philosophies, good things will be destroyed by bad things. That's a law of nature. So huge anti-cult movement rising in 76, saying these people are a bunch of brainwashers. Deprogrammers. Deprogrammers. They're doing brainwashing and this and that, all that sort of stuff. And then Prabhupada, with the help of Rameshwar Maharaj and others, could establish, and this lawsuit was won by ISKCON. Prabhupada was so very happy. Said, now our moment is here to stay. Now, the biggest powerful nation in the world, America, has accepted that this is a bona fide movement. And usually when America accepts something, others say, yes sir. Do not, because it is so powerful. So in this way, Prabhupada preserved, and through Holy Spirit and purpose, he expanded so much. What talk of dissemination? I don't know whether BBT even knows the scores. I think somebody said that the scores are known. There's so many million or whatever, it's a huge figure. Maybe somebody in BBT will know here. So many books gone, already out. Maybe somebody is throwing it down the dustbin, somebody is throwing it here, somebody is burning it off. How much can they throw in the dustbin? 1% they will throw in the dustbin. They will put it back to Raddi. But 95% will remain in their homes. 90% will remain in their homes. And then somehow. So because of that power of Prabhupada, we are still able to listen to the sacred words of a small boy who spoke some powerful sentences. Just one verse. Somebody spoke it in maybe Simhachalam. This admission was born, came over there. A small boy speaks something. Who could remember that for millions of years? Small boy speaks so many things. You don't even remember for the next 5 minutes what they spoke. Because what they speak is so unimportant. They're cracking jokes or this and that. And they speak. Parents don't take, yes, I remember my child saying this. Nobody remembers anything what happened in childhood. Well, you know, they remember all the other things. But a small child of 5 years spoke something millions of years ago. And I think, Jai Prahlad Maharaj. Who did that? Sacred Parampara. That is the power of Parampara. Therefore, we find that a very important aspect of our system of worship is to always have the entire Parampara strip in our. It is not that we have our Guru Maharaj and then we have Gaur Nithai, Radha Krishna, Narasimhadev. No. That is an incomplete type of worship. Along with our Guru Maharaj, there must be compulsorily the people he represents. Because we are not doing what we call as personality worship alone. We worship our Guru Maharaj dearly, with all opulences, with all glory, with all realization, because he represents the Parampara. He represents something so powerful, so sacred, so holy, so great, coming from Krishna. Because he represents all that, is the embodiment of all that knowledge in practice and in understanding. That's why the Guru Maharaj is worshipped. It is the personification of that knowledge which he is talking about. But to worship him without his connection with his Guru Maharaj or their Guru Maharaj like that is actually an offense to your spiritual master. He will be most displeased if he is not worshipped along with his predecessors. You cannot please a Guru Maharaj like that. Therefore, there is also always has to be a Parampara strip. And that's why it's so prominent in our temple, any temple, any temple which we go, our Hare Krishna temple, there will always be Prabhupada, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Babaji Maharaj, and of course the six Goswamis. Right now, when we offer obeisance here also, that's our regular practice. We come to our temple, pranams for the present Vaishnavas, and then we offer pranams to Prabhupada. But we know in our heart of hearts that we're not only doing to Prabhupada, even though we're chanting only his pranam mantra, but offering obeisance to simultaneously to all the six personalities who are there behind him. And then we get up from our pranam position, we look up and we also glance at the feet of the Sargoswamis who are just there on this side. So because we do that, we are aware that we are made conscious of the fact that we are in connection. From the six Goswamis, after seeing Prabhupada, the Parampara, Sri Goswami, and then we come to Nitai Gaurachandra and then Radha Gopinath. Gopalji. And this is the whole process is complete. So, we are about to launch our hearts into the sacred knowledge. So, I just felt that today, before we start the actual processes of Sranam Kirtanam, the traditional service, we first become conscious and aware of the great value and the deep mercy which we have been made available through this Parampara system. That one of the greatest disciples of Sri Narada Muni. Narada Muni has so many wonderful disciples. Two of them most important as far as Parampara is Prahlad and Vyasdev. Vyasdev wrote all the scriptures in accordance to his Guru Maharaj's will, especially wrote Srimad Bhagavatam for all of us. So these two disciples of Sri Narada are so important in our lives. And that's why Narada Muni is so important in our lives. That we will be getting access by Prabhupada's mercy to listen to all this. And with complete faith in the process now, something which just stood a test of time for millions of years, we can be blindly say, I believe this. I don't want proofs of fossils. I don't want proofs of sky pictures from satellites for seeing the bridge. I don't need these mundane proofs anymore, or scientific proofs by the scientific community talking about the same thing which is written in our books. Oh, yeah, even a scientist say that. Yeah, it must be true. No. Not because scientists are corroborating what we are saying that we accept that. We don't need any of the proof of the materialistic world whatsoever. We want knowledge by ascending process. We don't want that. We are only devoted completely to the process of knowledge through descending process. We are completely convinced of that. So no matter how bizarre some knowledge is there in the scripture, golden mountains and copper mountains and mango rivers and mango season now, there is some place where we are mangoes, looking for mangoes, very costly, hapus. There are places in the demigod planet where there are rivers of mangoes. Hapus ka samudra. And far better than Ratnagiri hapus, of course. Huh? Everything there is million times sweeter. Mangoes as big as elephants, they say. Or jambus as big as elephants. The jambu is a stupid small fruit, and 90% is a seed, 10% is a pulp. But imagine a jambu which is of the size of an elephant. Takes a stroke of faith, definitely. But no matter how bizarre this sounds to teeny human beings like us, so we're looking at Mount Everest through our ant-like bodies. So you want to find that the jambu is very big, naturally, because everything is so relative. So human beings, jambu is a big fruit. For demigods, this is a very small fruit. May not be a big fruit for them. So we're looking at the relative world, the relative eyes, the relative knowledge, everything relative. So however it may appear, sun is closer, moon is closer, all that debate goes on eternally. Whatever is there, if Prabhupada says something, the scriptures, if Prabhupada has written especially, says something, then we are going to say yes. I'm not able to argue out my case with scientific, support. But I just say, I don't care whether I have scientific understanding. It is there in Prabhupada's books. It is written by Prabhupada. It is supported by Bhakti Siddhanta. It is supported by his Goswamis. It is supported by Lord Chaitanya. Supported by Krishna. Then why do I have to really worry? If all these people are saying this is the real thing, then say, yes, sir, you must be right. I don't have to depend on my teeny brain for confirmation. So with this sort of implicit faith, yasya deve para bhaktir ithade tatha gurau tasait kritai artha prakashante matma. Only when you have this sort of implicit faith in the parampara and the spiritual masters and the Lord, only then and then alone will the knowledge of Shravanam become revealed in our heart. Otherwise it will be exercise, Shravanam, I knew this, hearing is important. Kirtanam, very important. And Archanam, of course, deity worship is a great pleasure to learn. So now we just sort of think that we know these things, and somebody will say the things which you already know. So we just nod our heads and say, well, good class. No. It only with a heart full of this sort of implicit faith can truly this knowledge be revealed in the heart. So we want to pray for that implicit faith. Not just intellectual faith, but implicit faith. And if once we have that implicit faith, even to a small iota, life is perfect. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So, any questions? So, thank you very much. Rathasmat Bhagavatam ki jai.